Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 1, Text Number 49, History of the Life of Ajamila. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Jatagyash tamasa jukta upaste vyaktam ibehe navida purvam aparam nasta janma smriditata. Purport and translation, or translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Om Vishnu, Paraparamhansa Paribrajakacharya, Ashtotarasata Sri Srimana Bhai Charanaravinda, Bhakti Vedanta Swami Sri Prabhupada Ki Jai. As a sleeping person acts according to the body, manifest in his dreams, and accept it to be himself, so one identifies with his present body, which he has acquired because of his past religious or irreligious actions, and is unable to know his past or future lives. Please repeat. Purport. A man engages in sinful activities because he does not know what he did in his past life to get his present materially conditioned body, which is subjected to the threefold miseries. As stated by Rishabhadev in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.4, Nunam Pramata Kurute Vikarma. A human being who is mad after sense gratification does not hesitate to act sinfully. Yad Indriya Priyata Apnoti. He performs sinful actions simply for sense gratification. Na sadhu manye, this is not good. Jata atmano yam ashan api kleshadi asha deha. Because of such sinful actions, one receives another body in which to suffer as he is suffering in his present body, because of his past sinful activities. It should be understood that a person who does not have Vedic knowledge always acts in ignorance of what he has done in the past, what he is doing at present, and how he will suffer in the future. He is completely in darkness. Therefore, the Vedic injunction is tamasi ma. Don't remain in darkness. Jyotigama, try to go to the light. The light or illumination is Vedic knowledge, which one can understand when he is elevated to the mode of goodness, or when he transcends the mode of goodness by engaging in devotional service to the spiritual master and the Supreme Lord. This is described in the Shvetashvara Upanishad 6.23. Yasha devi para bhakti yatha devi tatha garo tasheti kathita hi artha pakashanti mahatmana. Unto those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master, all the imports of the Vedic knowledge are automatically revealed. The Vedas enjoin, Tad vigyatnatam sa gurum iba bigachachet. One must approach a spiritual master who has full knowledge of the Vedas and be faithfully directed by him in order to become a devotee of the Lord. Then knowledge of the Vedas will be revealed. When the Vedic knowledge is revealed, one need no longer remain in the darkness of material nature. According to his association with the material modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, a living entity gets a particular type of body. The example of one who associates with the mode of goodness is a qualified Brahmana. Such a Brahmana knows past, present, and future because he consults the Vedic literature and sees through the eyes of a Shastra, Shastra Chakshu. He can understand what his past life was, why he is in the present body, and how he can attain liberation from the clutches of Maya and not accept another material body. This is all possible when one is situated in the mode of goodness. Generally, however, the living entities are engrossed in the mode of passion and ignorance. In any case, one receives an inferior or superior body at the discretion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Paramatma. As stated in the previous verse, Manashaiva puri deva purva rupam vipashyati anu mimam shati purvam manasa bhagavan ajaha. Everything depends on Bhagavan or ajaha, the unborn. Why doesn't one please Bhagavan to receive a better body? The answer is agyashtamat. Because of gross ignorance. One who is in complete ignorance cannot know what his past life was or what his next life will be. He is simply interested in his present body. Even though he has a human body, a person in the mode of ignorance and interested only in his present body is like an animal. For an animal, being covered by ignorance, thinks that the ultimate goal of life and happiness is to eat as much as possible. A human being must be educated to understand his past life and how he can endeavor for a better life in the future. There is even a book called the Bhrigu Samhita, which reveals information about one's past, present, and future lives according to astrological calculations. Somehow or another, one must be enlightened about his past, present, and future. One who is interested only in present bodies and tries to enjoy his senses to the fullest extent is understood to be engrossed in the mode of ignorance. His future is very, very dark. Indeed, the future is always dark for one who is grossly covered by ignorance. Especially in this age, human society is covered by the mode of ignorance, and therefore everyone thinks his present body to be everything, without consideration of the past or future. Om Agya. As a sleeping person acts according to the body manifested in his dreams and accepts it to be himself, so one identifies with his present body, which he acquires because of his past religious or irreligious actions, and is unable to know his past or future lives. So a very nice example here in translation. A sleeping person acts according to the body manifests in his dreams and accepts it as himself, to be himself. We can also see in dreams a sleeping person acts according to the body manifests in his dreams. We can see how we act according to the body in our dreams. In dreams, you can see it more vividly, actually how you're forced to act. You have much less control in the dream world. Things are happening and which we often we can't relate to because the dream world mixes everything up. And most of the time it's beyond control. in a dream, we don't want to do something, but the dream body is just taking us there, and we get in situations, fearful situations. We don't want to do it. We have very less control in our dreams. But still we are controlled. And we think we are the particular body we're in at that time, whatever it may be. And we're simply forced in various circumstances, and especially when it's some kind of scary circumstance, we really don't want to be there, but we don't have any control. You have to go through with it, everything. You never die in your dreams, though, do you? Even if you fall off a mountain or you get attacked by a big tiger or something, you never die. Because the mind never dies, it goes to the next body like that. So, but there you can see quite vividly in dreams how you have no control over your dream body. So similarly here, we have a little bit more control. And so we have much more conviction with this body, that I am this body, because I can kind of avoid, I see some unfavorable situation, I can avoid that situation, I can avoid that particular company if I want to. I have more control in this body, and therefore I think I am the controller of it, and I think I am the body. But in the dream it's much more vividly illustrated that actually we are not the controllers. We don't have control. It's simply the same thing in this gross body, in this awake stage. We don't have control, but we have a little more control in the dream state. But that bit of control that we have, we think, you know, I am the controller. And I am this body. In this way, we are, Maya Devi keeps us very happily under her influence, identifying with this body, which is the grossest type of ignorance. And from this ignorance, all the other ignorances spring. So, we have everybody has a very high opinion of themselves, of their activities, of their abilities. But it all comes from ignorance. Basically, of understanding I'm this body, it's ignorance. It's the grossest type of ignorance. And everything that comes from that is ignorance. You know, and then we get so great we can actually understand what the universe, how the universe is working by our tiny little brain. And actually from the very beginning of creation, it describes that when the false ego is manifested, and then interacts with the modes of material nature, and then the creation takes place because of the false ego. And Prabhupada says the false ego is agitated by the sex energy, then practically everything begins, so that the whole creation starts unfolding like that. So the very basis of it is, it's the ahankara in connection with tamagun. That's the whole of this existence. When we trace out the source of everything, we've come, at the beginning of this universe, we come to the hankara in connection with tamagun. So how can any knowledge or anything good happen in this material world? It's the very basis of this material world. So we're kept in ignorance, which is this purport, this identification of this body, which is acquired because of his past religious or irreligious actions, and is unable to know his past or future lives. So, the situation we're in right now is due to our past religious or irreligious actions, that's all. And we've got to act this out. So therefore, we're forced to act. We may not think we're being forced to act, but this is how we're being forced to act. We've got this much religious activity and this much irreligious activity that we performed in our past life, And the reaction from that, this is how we're going to be forced. We're going to be forced by this religious act, this much religious activity, and we're going to be forced by this irreligious activity, and nothing more. We can't change the program. We have to go along with that, and that will create our religious activities and irreligious activities for our next term, next body, and we have to act according to that. We're completely under the grip of nature, and we have to act accordingly. So, according to religious or irreligious activities, you get the four stages of life: dharma, artha, karma, moksha. And it is because of your religious or irreligious activity that you get your dharma or your artha and your karma or moksha. It's like from dharma comes your artha. Like you want to be successful in business and you see many, many successful businessmen. But the only reason they're successful is because of dharma. That's why they're making money in this lifetime. Why they're successful is not because of what they're doing now. It's because of what they did in their previous life. Their dharma, their religious previous activities of dharma, that's what's giving them the artha now. Another man, he's born in the same circumstance, same situation, and he's doing the same business, but he can't get it. He's scratching like anything. He just can't make it. Money doesn't come in. Because he just hasn't got the dharma of the other man. So that when you see someone extraordinarily wealthy, you should understand it's because of his dharma, that's all. Previous life. And so then if we act religiously in this life, then we'll just accumulate a better situation next life, materially speaking. So this is the way of nature, how nature is forcing us to act. Absolutely no control. But we can make choices. The result of the actions, what we're going to get, or the happiness and distress, that is predestined. You can't change that. But you can choose your activities. So this is the whole purpose of Vedic civilization, because practically speaking, if you don't have knowledge, you're, as like Prabhupada was pointing out, you're just like animals. An animal, he has to go by his nature. So we are forced by our particular nature. Everyone is forced by their nature. And so it means if you're forced by your nature, then what can you do? If it's your nature to do something, if you're going to do something bad the next minute, that means it's your nature. I can't stop it. It's my nature. Then what is the use of trying or struggling? Because if it's forced upon it by our nature, we're likely to make that choice. An irreligious choice appears before us. Sense gratification, which is irreligious, because of our nature, we're likely to accept it because we like that particular type of sense gratification. So how are we able to... it seems like there's no end to it. If we're simply forced like this by our nature, we're attracted to it, then there is no end to it. We're just going to go on and on and on and on. Then we have absolutely no say in the matter whatsoever. So practically it's like that. For animal life and people are not... following Vedic knowledge, as Prabhupada said, that it's actually like that. They are just like animals. They're just following their nature and their senses. Whatever comes in front of them they like, they'll be forced to accept. Practically, they have no control. They're forced to accept that. So they're just bound up in this samsara business. So Vedic life means that there are injunctions and there is duty. And therefore, if you stick by the injunctions and follow the duty, then you can actually, your actions will change. And by your activities, then in the next life, you'll get more promotion, etc. But then Bhagavad Gita, practically that's all it's speaking about, is duty. It's all duty. He's speaking about duty to Arjuna. I don't know. I'm confused. What shall I do, Krishna? But Krishna brings him back. Do your duty. You won't have a problem. You don't have spontaneous love for me. You've forgotten that. But at least do your duty according to Dharma. Act according to Dharma. Stay on Dharma. You won't get lost then at least. You may do. Even in Dharma, it's tricky. But at least you get piety. You get good activities. So go kill them, Arjuna. Kill your friends and family members. But in duty, as a matter of duty. Then you won't get... So this is the Vedic civilization. Follow your duty. Then you make progression. Otherwise, if you have no guidelines, then you'll just be just like an animal. You're just going to follow your senses and that's it. Whatever it is dictated, you will follow, you will go, you will take birth after birth after birth. There's no end to it. So human life is this special consideration that you do have the higher developed intelligence that you can ask, you know, what is the real purpose of life? What is the duty of life? And then you actually come to the Vedic injunctions or you become biased or dharmic. And by that dharmic activities, then you're going to better your situation, better your artha, better your karma, and then ultimately you can come to the mode of goodness, and then you can understand properly things as they are. Then you have a choice of what you want to do. But all this suffering and happiness and distress we get is simply due to our previous previous activities. You can't enjoy more. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Chaitanya Charita, you got this much happiness, this much distress. It's already fixed, settled. You don't get one bit more, you don't get one bit less. You just go through your life, you're going to get this much happiness and this much distress. It's not what you're doing now that's going to bring you happiness. Now, that's the way we're thinking. You know, I do the austerity, I go, I work hard, I get the money, then I go out and I enjoy it, I spend it, then I get the happiness. Enjoy, but it's not like that. If it's not coming, you're not going to get it. If you haven't got that happiness there from previous, you don't get it, no matter how hard you work for it. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, you don't have to try for happiness in this world. It's already fixed. Just as nobody tries for distress in this world. Nobody wants to be unhappy. They make a big endeavor to avoid it. He says, you don't even have to do that. You don't have to make a real big endeavor to avoid distress because it's coming anyway. You're going to get it anyway. And similarly, you don't have to make a big endeavor for happiness. It's already fixed. So happiness and distress, that's coming automatically. You don't have to worry. But Krishna consciousness, if you want that, you have to be very, very serious. You have to make a big endeavor. That's not going to come automatically. Mother and father, you get any life. And happiness, that's any life. But Krishna and Guru, you don't get. Only when you make the endeavor. So this is human form of life. We have to make this endeavor in this life to become Krishna conscious. To accept Guru, accept Krishna. Same thing, Prabhupada's quoting Lord Rishabhadeva. He's also giving the same message to his sons. This happiness of the material world, this sex life, is available for the hogs and dogs. Don't be like that, my sons. Perform austerities. Perform tapasya. Because in human form of life, you can do that. So then one takes to Vedic knowledge, then he can enlighten himself and Jyoti Gama, Tamashima, Jyoti Gama, come out of the darkness, come into the light. This is the whole purpose of the Vedic knowledge, is to get one out of the darkness, to elevate one from the tamagun to rajagun to satagun, from satagun to sudha satagun. This is the whole purpose of the Vedas. So, Prabhupada says that the the Vedas enjoin that one must approach a spiritual master who has full knowledge of the Vedas and be faithfully directed by him in order to become a devotee of the Lord. Then the knowledge of the Vedas will be revealed. When the Vedic knowledge is revealed, one need no longer remain in the darkness of material nature. So this is revelation. Vedas are giving revelation. And then you may no longer remain in darkness. So, but of course you have a choice. Prabhupada said one need no longer remain in, it means no need to, but you can if you like. So also, this is the danger of meeting, you're accepting Vedic knowledge, or you're approaching a spiritual master, but that spiritual master is not a devotee. Then he may give you very good instruction to be pious and dharmic, but he'll keep you in darkness by keeping you in the cycle of samsara. He won't give you the knowledge of which to go home back to Godhead by. But a devotee, he will do that. So therefore, one accepts a spiritual master. Prabhupada quotes a very famous here verse, Yasha Devi Parabhaktiya, that one who accepts the spiritual master has this implicit faith, both in the Lord and in the spiritual master. To him everything is revealed. The import of the Vedas is revealed. Vedic knowledge becomes revealed. And what is to be revealed by Vedas? Krishna. He says, I am the compiler of Vedanta, knower of Vedanta. And I am to be understood. I am to be revealed. It is me who is to be revealed by Vedic knowledge. So you have simply implicit faith in the Lord and the spiritual master. Then Krishna will be revealed. The Vedas, Krishna will reveal himself through that Vedic knowledge because of the implicit faith. So faith is the beginning, and faith is the end. It's simply the same faith, but it simply expands throughout your spiritual life until it becomes so great that your faith in Krishna, in the holy name, that the holy name reveals himself, that Krishna reveals himself. So this is the situation. And therefore we see that our humility is so much stressed in our line. This is the crest jewel of a Vaishnava quality, is humility. Because without humility, how can there be any revelation? It's being revealed to you. It's being revealed because of your implicit faith and service attitude. Yeah, so if we're not humble, then we won't have any kind of realization. Nothing will be revealed to us except our ahankara. We'll be revealed how great we are. That will be revealed. And we'll continue like that. So we shouldn't be proud of our understanding of our knowledge or anything like that, or our situations. Just like Krishna gives knowledge in Bhagavad Gita, he gives 20 items of knowledge. And he says, this I declare to be knowledge, and everything beyond this is ignorance. And the beginning, the first item he mentions is humility. Well, you may say, well, how is humility knowledge? Krishna's giving 20 items of knowledge. And he's saying, how is humility knowledge? But the thing is, unless you're humble, you won't get knowledge. Because you're receiving knowledge from the guru. But if there's no humility there, then nothing will be revealed. The guru can't give. So it all begins with that humility. And if that humility is there, not there, then no one will ever be able to understand Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his teaching. And he has personally given us Shikshashtika. He has personally given us his own example and his devotees. They've shown us that great example. And if we do not adopt this, we will never be able to comprehend the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu if there is no humility. So we can understand that everything actually is a gift. Krishna consciousness is a gift. It's a revelation. It's something that's given. It's not something that we achieve, but that we get by our own. We're aspiring for it. Or as Prabhupada said, you act. You act in such a way that you are the doer. But ultimately, you're dependent on Krishna. But in your activities, you're acting as if you are the doer. You are getting the result, performing to get the result. But actually, you're depending, you understand Krishna. It's depending on Krishna, the result of your activity. But you, yourself, you act as if you give in. In other words, you're fully enthusiastic. You're really into it to get the service done, to get the result. But you understand it's not by the activity I will get the result, but the result is dependent on Krishna's sweet will. So this is the whole of spiritual life, the whole of the Vedas is simply to seek the mercy of Vishnu. That's all. We just want to receive his mercy, because everything is given by his sweet will. His mercy is coming down, and practically his mercy is given over to his devotees. So simply by the sweet will of his devotees, we actually receive mercy. Krishna's mercy is actually the property of his devotees. So therefore, we shouldn't be proud of our study or our chanting or all of our devotional service that, you know, I'm going to get Krishna. You can be, Rupa Goswami says, be enthusiastic. But we should understand that ultimately it's a gift. It's a very personal thing. It's given by Krishna, but through the devotees all the way down. And it's given when the devotees are satisfied with one's devotional attitude. So therefore, yashadevi parabhaktiya, that you have, just that implicit faith is enough. Implicit faith in Krishna and his representative, the Guru. Implicit faith in the lotus feet of Guru and Krishna. That's enough. There's even a quotation in the Bible, if I might quote, when Jesus was passing through the crowds, and suddenly he stopped and he said, "Who touched me?" Someone touched his robe when he was going past. And he just stopped and he said, "Who has touched me?" And there's some little woman. And she said, He said, "Your faith alone has saved you." She understood just by touching the cloth of a saint that she would get. And he said, "Your faith alone has saved you." So like that, if we have implicit faith, then everything will be revealed. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the same thing. Maybe Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He's saying that in connection with the Dham, Navadvip Dham, revelation of the Dham, how you get revelation of the Dham, how that's revealed to you. He said that is revealed in and through the devotee. He said, when you have implicit faith, he said, the devotees, the pure devotees of the Dham, they're explaining the glories of the Dham, any Dham. Navadvip, Vrindavan, Puri, we've been hearing so many nice stories. But when you hear the pure devotee describing, if you have implicit faith in the words that which they are speaking are absolute, they're non-different from the subject matter they're speaking about, then those words will actually be manifest. You will actually see what's going on as they're speaking. It'll be manifest in your heart. It's like Vedavyas was speaking, someone had the picture of the Battle of Kuruketra. But anyway, he says, simply because of implicit faith, Guru Mukha Padma Bhakka Chiteti Kori Ayaka, same thing. You have implicit faith in those words. You become one with those words. And those words actually manifest. You actually see the pastime. If you're in Vrindavan and pure devotees describing the pastimes of Radha and Krishna going on, and you have implicit faith and just absorbed in those words will go in, you'll see the picture. It'll actually manifest. You'll actually see the pastime that's being described. And he said, this is the way actually to have revelation of the Dharma, through the devotee's words, with that implicit faith. Faith can move mountains, even the karmis know that. So we have mountains and mountains of sin and pup we have. So simple faith will get rid of all that. What do you need? One name of Krishna, chanting one time, can remove more pup sins that one can commit in billions and billions of lifetimes. And what do you need to receive that? The holy name is faith alone. Nityananda Prabhu is giving it. What for the price of faith only? So here we have the greatest thing. The great Krishna is being revealed in Kali Yuga through his holy name. And what is the price? Only faith. Krishna is so kind in this age. No other qualification is required. Simply implicit faith, that's all. And that implicit faith is given by Krishna through his representatives. And it comes through Guru, through the devotees. And we imbibe that faith and increase our faith. And so like this, always associating with devotees and following the injunctions, the devotional injunctions, then devotees, they very quickly become elevated and perfect their human form of life and very quickly go back home, back to Godhead. Then they don't have to worry. Here Prabhupada says you should understand your past life, your present life, and your future. You should know these things. A Brahmana should know these things. Then Trigala Shiddhi. Then he mentions the Bhrigu Samhita. You can also quote the Bhrigu Samhita. They'll tell you your past life. So at least the Brahmana should do that much, know his past, present, and future. Of course, this little... bit dangerous. I've seen people who studied the Bhrigu or went to see the Bhrigu teacher, and he tells them, and they start changing all their lives and they become confused, and it's going to happen like this. They start mold their life like that and get all kind of caught up in it. Better just to take complete shelter and surrender of the Guru's instruction, because actually it's karma. It's the Bhrigu Samhita is karma, it's dealing with karma. So some people get caught up on it. This is my Bhrigu says this, and they kind of pursue that path. But actually in devotional service, you don't have to pursue your karmic path. That was predestined. That is predestined for everyone. You're not obligated to do that when you take the devotional life. So then you know past, present, and future. Prabhupada at that city. And in that Gonitai Das in Puri, in Bhakti Kutia, who's managing the temple there, ISKCON temple. One minister came to see him and he said, you know, past, present, and future. You can read? Yes. Oh, very good. Read my hand. A lot of sickness coming. Disease. Old age. So much old age coming. Death is there. Guy was shaking. That's all in my hand. Yes, it's all there in your hand. But one minute, he said, everyone would get diseased. Everyone's going to grow old and everyone's going to die. He said, yes, exactly. I told you I could tell your future. You're going to get old, you're going to come to disease and die. So take to Krishna consciousness. This will save you from taking birth again. So like this, a devotee, he doesn't have to, he knows his past, present and future. He knows my past, I was a worm in the gutter, wriggling around in the gutter. That was my situation in my last life. I've been picked up. Now my present life, I've been given the process of devotional service. And what's my future life? Back to home, back to Godhead, guaranteed. So a devotee knows his past, present and future lives. So he's fixed in his activities. He's not going back to his past life. He's going back to worm species again. No, he knows his future destination. So everything is very clear for the devotee. So he doesn't have to worry about anything. He doesn't have to get all the cities to understand his past, present and future. He knows already. So he's situated perfectly. Jivaya Sarupaya Nitya Krishna Das. That's his constitutional position, and the spiritual master puts him in that position. He takes him out of this position of ignorance, I am this body, and he puts him in a, now you're Krishna's servant. Bow down before Krishna. Okay. And so he's perfectly situated. A new bhakta, day one. You're situated very, very perfectly. He's told you, you're Krishna's servant. Bow down to Krishna. He's perfectly situated. He's more perfectly situated than all the big yogis who haven't come to the conclusion. The big jnanis, they haven't come, been doing jnana for billions of births. Bahunam jamaranti, being jnani. They haven't come to the conclusion of jnana that Vasudeva Shavam, they haven't come to that conclusion. They've got to go, no, thousands and thousands more births. Yogis, thousands and the new bhakta comes in the ISKCON temple. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or is he? Yeah. You know you're not the body? I didn't know that. You're the spirit soul. I am. I didn't know a spirit soul. Yeah, you're the eternal servant of I am. Bow down before Krishna. Okay. Help us clean the floor, Prabhu. Perfectly situated on day one in ISKCON. Otherwise, you pursue the paths of karma, jnana, yoga, millions and millions and millions of births. But the devotees know, they're very kind, very compassionate. Put you in that, here you are, Krishna's servant. Day one. And from that, no looking back. You're Krishna, it's perfectly situated now, tomorrow, the next, all the way. Till you leave this body, you go back to Godhead. Perfect situated. Krishna's servant. Servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. This is the grace of devotee. And we simply have implicit faith in the devotee, in Krishna, and the process that they're giving, and everything is revealed. We're situated perfectly now, and we never have to leave that position. If we don't want to, we have a choice. But if we want to remain in that position, nothing can shake us from that position. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Samaveda Bhaktabinda ki, Nitai Go Premanandi.